T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Heyman.
Feels like an Arby's night.
MLB Network Insider. WFAN New York. Larry David Enthusiast. At John Heyman on Twitter.
Pretty good.
John Heyman.
Mullion Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. John Heyman joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline. Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. John, good morning. How are you?
Morning, John.
Good morning, guys. How are you guys doing?
We're holding up. We're still kind of, trying to recover from the stories of recovery that we heard from Tommy Hotovy yesterday. That was extraordinary, and I would tell everyone to make sure they check it out, because you know it really brought it home to you. It really was an amazing, horrific story of what he went through and his recovery and his fears about the kids and his misses, and it just really humanized it, I think.
Absolutely, and I'm not a doctor or scientist, anything like that, but we see there's just so many more cases now of young people, relatively young people, getting the virus. The statistics show that the younger people handle it much better. It is much more dangerous for older people, and that's why these sports are going ahead with their plans. But the virus hits different people in different ways. You get different strain, different amount, whatever, and it certainly is a scary situation.
You know, John, just curious what you thought. We've seen some players opt out, guys like Ian Desmond and other people make decisions that everybody should respect. When you see an admission and somebody as transparent as Tommy Hotovy was yesterday, a 38-year-old former major leaguer who's the picture of health and now a pitching coach, and he wants to do his job and he wants to be part of this season, what effect will that have on the mindset of players, if any, do you think, whether it's the Cubs or throughout Major League Baseball, when they see somebody as transparent as he was tell his story?
Yeah, I just think there's just a lot of pressure on these guys to play, and I hope there's no criticism of the guys who are opting out, and we've seen a handful of guys who have decided to opt out without pay, and these are all very personal decisions, and I have no criticism for anybody who decides not to play, whether they have somebody in their family with an issue or whatever. It is a very scary situation, and I'm particularly nervous for many of the managers who are in their 50s, 60s, and in some cases over 70, and are going out there and with pre-existing conditions, and going out there and doing it. I haven't heard from one manager yet who is not going to participate, but do we know that Terry Francona, Dusty Baker, and Ron Gardenhire, three very prominent managers who are all over the age of 60, Dusty over the age of 70, all have some underlying conditions, and I've seen no hesitation on their part. So I'm nervous for baseball. I'm certainly nervous for them.
I'm very curious, John, to get your opinion on what Rob Manfred said yesterday on the Dan Patrick show. He was asked to kind of rank how he thought he did in the negotiating process, and he said that the truth is there were never going to be more than 60 games. That was never going to happen. Doesn't that kind of fuel the grievance? If you're negotiating with someone and they're kind of showing their hand about different things and you're offering, at one point it was 72 games, and you never were going to play more than 60, doesn't that sort of give them the case they're looking for if they want to file a grievance?
Yeah, I'm not sure why he said that. Maybe he meant never more than 60 prorated. He certainly didn't say that. You are correct in the way you heard it. They did make multiple offers for more than 60 games. I mean, I know when you're negotiating, a lot of times you assume that the other side's not going to take that offer and going to keep negotiating. But, I mean, they started these negotiations quite a while ago, and there certainly was time for more than 60 games as their offers reflected. So I'm not sure why he said that, but you're right. It could be part of a grievance. We'll see. We'll see what happens here. But it's been a tough time for baseball that they didn't get a deal done. And over the economics, it was a positive that it was written into the March 26th agreement that he could set a schedule, mandate the season, however you want to put it, so that the season would not be canceled over economics. So we'll give him credit for that, but it's obviously been a very difficult episode for baseball.
And it gets more difficult, John, I think, when he talks. And I wonder if Mully's onto something here. When you make that kind of declaration publicly, are you demonstrating that you really were not negotiating in good faith? Something that might come back later because of the form that he said and acknowledged this. Does it come back later and used against him, his own words?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, that will be up to the arbitrator, Mark Irvings, who will decide what goes on here with this grievance. You know, I think the owners are very confident, and they certainly said that publicly, that they don't think there's anything to the grievance. The players obviously feel that there is, because the owner's last offer included $33 million in salary forgiveness, $25 million player playoff pool, and many other goodies that they gave up to have this grievance, which, you know, it's not great for baseball. And the vote was 33-5. So there were only four, I believe, four teams and one player that voted to take the offer. The other 33 entities, mostly teams, 29 of them being, about 26 of them being teams, voted not to take the offer and to go ahead with the grievance. The Cubs, in my understanding, are one of the handful of teams, and I believe it was four teams, that voted to take the offer and go ahead and play, by the way.
Oh, that's good to know. John, as we talk about what Rob Manfred said, he was also asked about the season and what would happen if something went awry. What was kind of the tipping point on that? And he seemed to indicate that it could just be a couple of teams, that the idea would be if you have one or two teams decimated by the coronavirus and they felt there wasn't going to be any competitive possibilities with those organizations, that would throw the whole thing up for grabs, because it would then make some teams more likely to get in and other teams. It would just change the complexion. So, you know, as much as we talk about Tommy Hotovy's situation and how you would imagine that Cubs pitchers, the Cubs players would take this very seriously after hearing those stories, if one or two guys go off the rails on this thing, that could bring down one or two teams and that could bring down the entire thing.
Yeah, I mean, let's go back to when the spring training was suspended in the middle of March. It basically took positives in another sport. A couple of positives in the NBA, they canceled, and then it was chain reaction, and baseball canceled. We're going to have tens of positives in baseball and continue to go on, whether it be somebody becoming seriously ill or a whole team being decimated by having guys on the injured list due to the COVID situation. You know, it's going to be up to Rob Manfred to make that decision, and he can call off the season anytime in his judgment. You know, it's going to be a tough situation. It is his call, once again, just as it was his call to set the schedule. It is in his hands, so there's a lot of pressure on him right now. You know, we know that there are going to be a lot of positives. We had 40 in a week, counting staff. But that's not going to do it now. It's the goalposts have been moved, and it's going to take a serious illness or a decimation of one or two teams, as you said.
John, of less importance but still interesting is how this game, how baseball will be covered. There have been rules for radio teams and television crews, and I wonder, you know, you are somebody that if you know spring training 2.0, typically you would be making your way around to find out what the news is and what your plans are. What, how do you think that media companies will react and respond to the pandemic in the kind of the new normal with the 60-game season and the abbreviated spring training? Will there be as much travel involved, and do you plan to do so?
Yeah, I don't see any travel. It's going to be done by Skype and FaceTime, and you know, it's going to be far less personal coverage. There'll be no one-on-one interviews, no personal interaction. It's going to be quite different. Yeah, I'm not going to go to spring training. I'm in New York now, and I'm just going to do MLB Network through spring training, and then we'll play it by ear and see how things go for now. But you know, I don't anticipate being at many, if any, games. And you know, if you're a beat writer, it's going to be. And I haven't been a beat writer for 30 years, but it's going to be quite a different situation. No personal interaction whatsoever. So the coverage is going to be much more shallow than it has been in the past. And at a time where we need more coverage and we need to know what's going on.
John, you know, obviously one of the big storylines here is going to be how the National League figures out their DH spots. And we've talked about Kyle Schwarber with the Cubs, and it just seems like a natural. The guy's been a DH pretty much his whole career, and he'd be a good one. But how will he respond to that? It's a different role. You know, is that the best thing to do? Do you just move a guy out of the outfield and there is a transition there? How, generally speaking, are National League clubs going to do this? Does everyone have a guy they had in mind for that role, or are they going to get caught a little bit here because they didn't really anticipate it and didn't plan for it before the season began?
Yeah, most teams are going to be caught. The National League teams were planning for a normal season until the pandemic hit in the middle of March. And, you know, we didn't know that there was going to be DH in the National League. I think it's a good decision. MLB did it and gave that concession up, even though they've been against DH rather easily because they want to protect pitchers' health from the normal health situation, not COVID, but just it adds an element of not danger, but an element of potential extra injury for pitchers hitting. So I think it's a good decision. There are a couple teams like Milwaukee, Ryan Braun, due to the signings, Avisiel Garcia with the Brewers. Really, he does not have a position right now, and he's the natural DH for the Brewers. So it works out perfectly for them. I think it works out well for the Cubs. Schwarber, to me, is an obvious DH, an excellent hitter who's not a great outfielder, as you guys well know. But most teams will move it around, and that's the way a lot of American League teams have been using it more and more. Not many teams have a David Ortiz type who is a natural DH. So some National League teams will be at a disadvantage. It won't necessarily be fair, but there's going to be a lot of things that aren't perfectly fair about this season.
John, I'd like to compliment you on the accuracy in your reporting in response to Dexter Fowler's tweet about St. Louis having the best pizza on earth. You came back and you said the real pizza rankings are number one Chicago, number two New York. Well played.
Thank you. Yes, I mean, I went to school in Chicago. I love Chicago pizza. At that time, it was Gino's East and Giordano's that I recall, but Lou Malnati and all the others. I just love deep dish pizza. And one thing people don't know about New York, which got my second place, is it's the outer boroughs. If you're going to get pizza in New York, don't get it in Manhattan. For whatever reason, there's no good pizza in Manhattan. It's all in Queens and Brooklyn and Long Island and New Jersey, Staten Island. So that's a weird thing about New York. But for me, Chicago pizza is the best. I was just in Chicago, and I was very disappointed that the group didn't want to go for Lou Malnati, and we went to Gibson's, unfortunately, for my one day in Chicago, which isn't
what a
bad.
Letdown.
It's not bad. It's a letdown, yeah, because I wanted the Chicago pizza. It's the best. Yeah, Dexter said St. Louis has the best pizza. I do like St. Louis. My dad lived in St. Louis. beautiful town. Their pizza, not very good.
It was Fowler's Folly. I don't understand how.
I don't get it.
Is there such a thing as St. Louis style pizza? I've never heard of it.
Yeah, there is. Italian food's big up on the hill, Eno's, and all the other places. And, you know, their Italian food is known. I wouldn't say it's particularly great, but it's certainly well known there. But the pizza is nothing to speak of. You'd be better off just getting a frozen pizza.
Yeah, the lack of pizza drove the NFL out of there. That's my opinion.
Is that right?
See?
It's my
Thanks,
story.
John
I didn't thank you.
That. I'm not a football expert. I should know that.
I just made it up.
Good stuff.
All right, buddy. Great
All
talking
right.
to you, John. Take care.
Nice talking to you.
That is our guy, John Heyman. That's a great pickup there, David. He did. He went after Dexter for Fowler's Folly.
And he deserved it.
What an error.
Fowler,
yeah.
Come on. Pandering to the St. Louis crowd. Come on.
Yeah. You're right. He may as well go to the Dyersville, Iowa, and claim that pizza's good, too.
Exactly.
I'm sure they have a pizza place, but I'm guessing it's not as good as we have here in our town. God bless us.
No, best pizza here and the best corn on the cob, probably Dyersville, Iowa.
Well, I don't know. You probably have to eat it right off the – there's a very famous sports writing story that I'll tell you someday about Abe Gibron back in the day with our guy Tim Weigel. Anyway, let's – let's get ourselves a moment here. Mully and Haw, 312-644-6767, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
I think the most important thing to our fans is that we're going to make every attempt to get the game back on the field. I know some people have talked about longer seasons, 62 short. The reality is, we weren't going to play more than 60 games, no matter how the negotiation with the players went or any other factor. 60 games is the outside of the envelope, given the realities of the virus. And, you know, I think this is the one thing that we come back to every single day. We're trying to manage something that has proven to be unpredictable and unmanageable. I know it hasn't looked particularly pretty in spots, but having said that, if we can pull off this 60-game season, I think it was the best we were going to do for our fans, given the course of the virus.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That is the voice of Robman Fred, and he was on the Dan Patrick Show. Robman Fred? Fred Manrob.
The commissioner.
Yeah, that was the commissioner. And, wow. I mean, I get it. You can claim it's about the virus, but, I mean, that's a pretty damning thing to say. That, effectively, you managed to see the hand of your opponent with an upcoming negotiation in the offing. And that's to me, that's not negotiating with good faith. I think you're right, David. I don't like hearing that from him. If there was never going to be more than 60 games, then why didn't you just say that? Why didn't you say that the virus is limiting us?
I think it's another example of the way that Rob Manfred speaks publicly, and what comes out of his mouth he later regrets. And it's not the first time, and it won't be the last. Mully, you're exactly right. When you talk about what's at stake with the 2021 negotiations over a new CBA, it's going to be about what? Trust. Everybody says that, correct? So now, after the fact, now that we have a 60-game season that came after months of weeks of squandering the opportunity to get back on the field, you go back and you start to look at the facts. And what he said yesterday in the Dan Patrick show, admitting that they were never going to be anything but a 60-game schedule, it flies in the face of what was said and reported from the MLB side on June 12th, 5 days before he and Tony Clark met in Arizona and had that secret agreement. Remember that, when neither side agreed on what they actually agreed upon. But before that, going back, Major League Baseball proposed officially a 72-game season that included proration for 70% of the prorated salaries and 80% of the, if the postseason is completed. That was a proposal. If that proposal was not now made in good faith, this is an admission that they never had any intention of playing 72 games. So that is the definition of bad faith. So I don't know why he would acknowledge that publicly unless he just doesn't worry about a grievance being filed, because doesn't it sort of just admit that everything about what went on before they had this 60-game agreement was nonsense?
Wow. I mean, it means that all these idiotic proposals that you knew the union was never going to accept, we're just going to take the money from the guys making the most money. All that was just, it was just messing around. It was designed to perhaps create a schism within the union. I got to tell you, that is the most damning thing he could have said.
Yes.
What the heck is he thinking? Labor lawyer, and they're talking about a $1 billion grievance or whatever it was, and it was so serious that they wanted, part of the negotiation is that they had to promise not to grieve, and then we'll go ahead. There was, it explains why they got into a panic over that grievance, and then they finally got to their window with the 60 games, and off you went. I believe that what he said to Dan Patrick is true. I do. And I believe the rest of it was just nonsense. And let me tell you something. It damaged the game. That's another example of, if you're engaging in this, as you say, this kind of mistrust, distrust, whatever way you want to put it, if you're actually negotiating with someone, if you're turning them into an opponent and you're trying to win, or you're knocking them around like a ball of yarn and your cat-like paws, how does that make this any easier to qualify to get done when you have to?
It makes you feel worse about all the time that was squandered waiting for an agreement that was never now going to happen. And now we know it, because what he did yesterday on the Dan Patrick show was he kind of spoke the thing that he wasn't supposed to say. What you're not supposed, well, we knew all along. It's kind of like sharing the secrets after the fact, because we didn't know that all along. We were led to believe back on June 12th that the proposal to start a 72-game season was just that. It was legitimate and it was credible because it came from MLB and it came from the commissioner, and this was what they wanted to do. They wanted to salvage a season sooner rather than later. Now they waited because it got contentious, and now we have to wait until July 24th. Maybe we couldn't have played any sooner anyway because of the pandemic, but that's after the fact. This was an acknowledgement they never intended to really seriously consider anything other than 60 games, so they were wasting everybody's time suggesting otherwise.
It is really, again, this guy, he can't resist whatever arrogance or whatever. I don't even know how to define it. I mean, this guy is walking around. What do you care about that anyway? It's a piece of iron. You know, he's repeatedly gone off the deep end here, and I think he just did it again. And I don't understand how a person in his line of work, with his questionable motives, can be as forthright about something. It just is crazy.
I wonder if it's a matter of something as simple as when some people get in front of a microphone, or if they get in a public speaking environment, they often say things they're not supposed to, or they talk until they think of something to say. You know what I mean? It's like they continue to filibuster or to say things that maybe they shouldn't have. because we've seen him repeat this pattern and he's done this before. And the piece of metal comment was just because he almost was like trying to fill space in what he should have said. And he never can say the things that he said. He's terrible in front of the mic. And what he, you know, how that perception is created, it affects the reality. And that's a problem when you're a commissioner of a sports league like Major League Baseball. And yesterday he did it again. He did it again.
Oops, he did it again. Yeah, it's something else. And, you know, again, there's a lot whirling around here with the Major League Baseball season. Let's get to it. Let's get, you know, it's great to have people reporting to work, to have people going through baseball things like hitting the baseball and pitching the baseball and catching the baseball, all of the wondrous things we'll see in the game. I think this has been an abject disaster, these negotiations. And I think that the owners at one point sort of had everyone on their side, as they often do in these labor disputes. Oh, look at these players. But now, after this sort of putting on the poor mouth, and then you find out that it was never going to be more than 60 games because the commissioner blurts it out in an interview, I got to tell you, it makes me wonder what's wrong with these people. What, I mean, you're the stewards of the game, owners. Why aren't you protecting it? Why aren't you going about trying, you know, instead of complaining about money in a time where the whole bloody country is taking pay cuts and forced leave and you know, trying to restart and not able to. It just is so unpleasant, David. I just don't understand what people are thinking, how you don't take into account the way others are going to perceive you.
Greed is blinding, and money can do that. And I think when you hear the kind of thing you heard from Manfred yesterday, it does make you question the people that he works for, whether that's fair or not. His admission that there was never going to be a 60-game season, anything but a 60-game season, it makes you wonder if the owners knew that all along and how disingenuous their claims were. When you look back, because this wasn't that long ago. And so you're right, the stewards of the game have neglected the responsibilities, and you feel more strongly about that contention and that kind of assertion or opinion the longer this goes on. And you do have 2021 to worry about, and this doesn't help kind of bring the sides together. This just makes it feel like they're getting further and further apart the more time that passes.
312-644-6767. Is it Brian or is it Brain? I can't tell.
Brian.
It's either one. I've been called both. yeah, you guys kind of hit it on the head. What I was calling about was right at that very end, 2021. They could find so many clips in print or audio of Manfred that if he is still the commissioner, which I don't know how he can be, they basically just need to play that Dan Patrick clip and say, we're on strike and this is why. And how does Rizzo not go up to the Ricketts, call them up, or Bryant, and call them up and go, is this true? So I'll kind of hang up and listen.
Well, I don't know that the players, I think Ian Happ would be the guy that you'd want to hear from. And Ian Happ, you will hear from today. He will be on with Dan Bernstein at 9 a.m. And I'll be very curious to hear what the Cubs player rep has to say about this subject. Because, again, it seems like, I don't know, David, maybe you're right. Maybe this guy is just a kind of a babbling buffoon when he gets before the microphone. And you know, when you're asked, hey, what kind of job did you do? Maybe his response, you know, just automatically was, well, you know, we're never going to play more than 60 games. I mean, it was, look at the virus. Maybe he's defending himself in some peculiar way. But I think it's a legitimate thing to wonder about. I think it's a legitimate thing to question, especially a guy who is a labor lawyer who's supposed to have figured out what is allowable and what isn't, Your Honor. Give me a break.
And I would hope that Tom Ricketts, even though he addresses the team once a year at spring training in Mesa, that he does it again, because he has an obligation to explain to these players what happened and why. And I think that if he's smart, he will do that as soon as today, as late as whenever. But they're gathered, they're testing, they got the team back, hopefully back on the field tomorrow. It's time for them to hear from the chairman, because I think that the guys like him in those roles have a responsibility to explain exactly what happened and what the commissioner was doing on their behalf.
All right, we're going to bring in Dan Wolkin next from USA Today. We'll talk to their fine columnist about the possibility of a college football season and what are these coaches up to. Boy, Boomer Esiason has a low opinion of him. We'll run it by Dan as well. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
I got to be really careful here because I don't want to say that this is an accusation. I don't want to. I just was thinking the other day about what is going on with the SEC teams down south, and Clemson included, who's obviously an ACC team. A lot of their players are coming down with COVID-19, oddly enough. So are they trying to herd immunity their teams so these guys can get sick now as opposed to getting sick during the college football season, if in fact there is one? And I'm telling you right now, I wouldn't put it past any of those guys down there.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 the score. Wow, that was Boomer Esiason at WFAN, and he doesn't want to accuse anybody, but what if? Let's welcome in Dan Wolkin. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Dan, of course, with USA Today, covering all the college sports and all the big stories. And Dan, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Dan.
I'm doing well. Doing well. How are you guys?
What did you think of Boomer?
Well, I think that's a little bit out there. I mean, look, are there kids who have heard about this idea that you get the virus, you survive, you build antibodies? Yes, I think there are certainly kids who have heard that and who are thinking, you know, hey, maybe it's better to get infected now and so I'll be healthy during the season. But I don't think there's a high number of people who are intentionally trying to get this virus. And I certainly don't think it's being encouraged by these coaches or these schools. The risk factor in that is way, way, way too high.
Dan, great column yesterday in USA Today about the growing pessimism surrounding college football and the athletic directors and commissioners and people involved with the sport, even some of the coaches now, are acknowledging the fact that it's going to be a big ask to get everything on schedule this fall for college football. Sandy Barber from Penn State came out yesterday and she said it would be a last resort to play in the spring. Although I've spoken to a couple people myself who thought that might be a more viable, safe option for college football. Where does it stand and what do you expect?
Yeah, I would agree with Sandy that it's a last resort, but we're kind of at the last resort time of year, because when the calendar crossed over into July, we're now in the month where these kids are supposed to start actual football practice. You know, in a couple weeks, you're supposed to be doing essentially, you know, OTAs, the equivalent of an OTA for 2 weeks. And then we're getting into contact and preparing for games. And so it's here. Like, this is now or never. And I think next week, when the Ivy League announces what they're going to do with fall sports, that is going to have a huge influence on the thinking for a lot of people in the business. And I'm not saying that everyone will necessarily just fall in line behind whatever the Ivy League does, but there's no doubt that those people have credibility among college presidents. And if the Ivy League says, listen, we're just going to punt on the fall and try to move everything to the spring, that will influence a lot of people's thinking.
You know, what's fascinating about that is obviously they do not participate in the bowl subdivision of football, and yet, you know, I agree with what you're saying. They will carry a lot of weight, but the more you read and hear about it, a lot of these schools need the money for their programs. They need a certain number of people there. They rely on this to fuel everything. And with the tournament gone, I mean, there is almost a panic among some of these big programs, right?
Well, there's no doubt that financial expectations for the coming year are low. They are modeling all kinds of different scenarios within these athletic departments. What does it do if You only get 20% of the fans in attendance. What does it do if you're limited to 40%? You know, all those things are in play. I've heard that some conferences and universities are looking into lining up lines of credit, you know, with banks to try to float them some money to get through this year, which would obviously be borrowed and repaid. But, you know, long term, I think the outlook for college sports is good, but there's no doubt that the challenges for this year are many, and just surviving, you know, whatever is coming over the next few months is going to be really, really difficult.
Dan, yesterday a remarkable thing happened at the University of Illinois. Milo Eifler, a linebacker, went on Twitter and he talked about schools, quote, showing a blatant disregard for student athletes and the health and safety. And then his media session was delayed a couple hours while he talked to Lovie Smith and Josh Whitman. And then he came out and he spent an hour talking to reporters about his concerns. And I just wonder, in an age where you're hearing from student athletes and football players in college football more than ever, and their power is being felt and it resonates, do you think, how much weight will that carry? Will those concerns of the players carry when making these decisions, if we hear more guys like that coming forward?
Well, yeah. Look, I think one of the big issues in restarting college sports is that the input of the student athletes is kind of in the background. You know, with the NBA and the NFL and Major League Baseball and all these sports that are trying to restart, the players help set the rules and how this is going to go. The players are there at the table negotiating what it's going to mean and what's in it for them. And for the college students, there's not really any incentive to play beyond the typical ones, which is the opportunity to showcase your skills and learn and be part of a team and all that stuff. But the experience of being a college athlete is not going to be normal this year. This is not what anybody signed up for. And yet these guys are basically being told, show up on campus at this date, at this time, and practice the way we tell you to practice, and trust us that we're going to do everything we can do to keep you safe. But they've not had any input in that from the athlete side. So, you know, more people speaking up like that young man at Illinois, I think is good, because I think for far too long, the concerns of the people who are putting their bodies and their health on the line have been ignored.
You know, we talked to Tommy Hotovy, the Cubs pitching coach, yesterday about his struggles with this. Now, Tommy, 38 years old, and a guy that is in great physical condition, a former professional player, but he's still feeling the effects more than a month later. And this idea that somehow you can just get through this and younger people aren't going to die, if you actually study the numbers, you know, let's say there's three deaths among younger players. How can you justify any deaths? How can you, you know, how can people go about pretending that this isn't happening around them and trying to continue to play football? We saw the most number of cases ever in this country yesterday, and it's all kind of through the South. I don't understand how. And I know schools are trying to get people to wear masks and they're trying to spread the word on this, but until that actually happens, I don't think I understand how this is going to happen.
Well, the biggest concern I have in sports generally is just that there's so much unknown with this virus. It's new, it's unstudied, you know, relative to other diseases and viruses that we live with. We don't really understand, you know, why it affects certain people the way it does. What the long-term effects are, why some people seem to be completely asymptomatic and other people really, really struggle for weeks and weeks who are seemingly healthy. We don't really understand, you know, what will be the effects of this virus on people who have it, you know, in 10 years. You just don't really know. So, yeah, that's a little scary. It's a little daunting. And it's why when you restart sports, you can't just do it cavalierly with this idea that, well, it's young, healthy people, they're going to recover and be fine. That's not an acceptable answer. We need to be taking precautions. I think there's something to be said for, yes, we have to learn how to live with this virus. We can't just shut down forever. But we need to take all the precautions and take our time and not rush. And that's where I think a lot of the schools and, you know, even the pro leagues are putting themselves at risk, is just the rush. to try to do something that we don't fully understand.
Dan, I've long maintained that there are two college footballs. There's the Power Five, and then there's everybody else. And I don't think that's necessarily a huge revelation, but I think that when you look at what to expect moving forward and the different types of goals in mind and the motivations to play this season, they're different. They're very different, and they're going to be affected, these programs, in different ways. Is there any kind of solution that would have different paths for these different types of programs? Because you can't tell me the Mid-American Conference, for instance, has the same problems and issues and concerns or realities that maybe the SEC schools do. And I think they're two very different things.
Well, there's definitely been, throughout the modern history, the recent history of college sports, a widening of the gap between the, you know, the rich schools and the poor schools. And you're seeing it play out with the pandemic in the sense that just as one example, testing. You know, the NCAA is not dictating anything on testing. They're leaving it up to the conferences and potentially the schools to determine what's appropriate. And the testing's expensive. You know, and there's certain schools who can afford to test players, you know, 2-3 times a week. And there's other schools who that's a real challenge for them to come up with that money. And yet they're all going to play each other, you know. And so what happens when you've got a school that has tested all their players, you know, 3 times a week, and they know that they don't have any current infections, and yet they got to go on the field against a team that is only testing people once they show symptoms, and we don't really know if people have it when they step on the field. So, you know, all these sort of fault lines are being exacerbated by the pandemic, and not just in sports, but in society. And yeah, I mean, this is one area where people are really concerned about, you know, not just what's going to happen on the field this year and who's going to get sick, but yeah, what does it mean for the future of college sports? Is this going to force some type of separation and all those things? I mean, they're all legitimate issues.
Dan, we'll let you go and appreciate your time. Just on the way out, is it your belief that there will be a college football season, or are you worried about this latest spike, and do you want to take a little more time before making a prediction on that one?
Well, I don't love making these types of predictions anyway, just because the facts that are underlying all these issues are so dynamic. And, you know, right now, just in talking to people in the industry, there's a lot of concern. There's a lot of belief that maybe this will get pushed to spring, that once the Ivy League moves, it'll force a chain reaction of movement that sort of pushes things back, you know, if not to the spring, maybe to October, you know, something like that. But yeah, I think it's going to be a tough season. It's going to be a shortened season. It's going to be a season with starts and stops and unpredictable things that happen, and teams that are not going to be able to continue to play because they're just overwhelmed by infections. And yeah, it's not ideal. There is no good choice to be made here. The key for college sports in this is just avoiding a bad choice.
Dan, thanks a ton. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan. Good stuff.
Good to talk to you guys. Thank you.
That's Dan Wolkin from USA Today. We're going to shift gears and bring in Brian Scalabrine next. We'll get a chance to talk to our NBA insider about what's going on in the NBA. And as if things weren't bad enough, I read a story yesterday, David Dyer prediction about the number of potential tendon ligament injuries that could be coming in the NBA. So we'll run it by Brian. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.